This week's show with Dr. Susan K. Williams, Chief Executive of the Royal School of Needlework, is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. The Nashville market has just concluded, and Kim Everett and the Sassy Jack's trailer returned with all of the new charts that were offered at the show, including the line of reproduction samplers from Barbara Hudson of Queenstown Sampler Designs. Contact Kim right away and order your favorites. But don't just order the chart. Kim can help you put together full kits so you can start stitching the minute the mail arrives. Also, don't forget to check out the full collection of sassafras samplers at sassyjackstitchery.com and, while you're there, join the Cosmos Thread Club. It's a great way to build up a stash of beautiful cotton floss. If your significant other is wondering what to buy you for your birthday or any other national holiday, they can't go wrong with a Sassy Jack's gift certificate. Make Sassy Jack Stitchery your local needlework store by visiting the website at sassyjackstitchery.com. And now, on to our conversation with Dr. Susan K. Williams of the Royal School of Needlework. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from the Royal School of Needlework, the Chief Executive, Dr. Susan K. Williams. Susan, welcome.
Gary, it's delightful to be back with you again. It's been a long time.
It has been a time, yes, but always fun. So thanks for making time to do this. Now, the purpose for the listener out there, the purpose of this conversation is to share all the things that the Royal School is doing and has lined up for the future so that people can be aware, because there is so much. And I'm sure people will think, well, I can't get to Hampton Court Palace, so what do I care? Well, that's the point, is you do care, because it's so much more now accessible. And as we were saying before we started recording here, I've been watching as the pandemic went on, what are the positives that will come out of this? Because there are always positives. As ugly as it was, there has to be some positives. And medicine and science, we've barely seen the benefits that we're going to get out of what had to happen to get vaccines and to deal with the virus. But the other thing is, and this applies much more broadly, is it forced us to put technology in place to continue to do business and to continue to communicate when we couldn't be face-to-face. And you guys are a classic example, at least in my mind, of that very thing, the catalyst of, we got to stay in business, we got to still offer our classes and courses and communicate with people. And so tell me a little about that, that experience that you guys went through.
Well, it was all terribly shocking when in the beginning of middle of March 2020, we were told to go home. And I went and told our degree students and our future tutor students in particular, go home, take as much as you can carry, and we'll start teaching you online on Monday. Meanwhile, my tutors and I were going, "Ooh, what does that mean? How are we going to do that?" I know some of them spent that first weekend just experimenting with things. And certainly the first few weeks we were very sort of hit and miss, but everyone was willing to have a go. And in fact, it was our future tutors who were the most ambitious in many ways, and so they tried different things, and we quickly began to see what worked and what didn't work so well. But also the fact that if you said to somebody, well, take an image of your work and then send it via WhatsApp, then actually the tutor could then enlarge it and see exactly what you were doing right and wrong, and so we could realize that, oh, there might be some advantages in this. Mm-hmm. And so we were quite trepidatious at first, I think it's fair to say. But by May of 2020, we thought, well, let's experiment and see if we could actually do a course online. And one of our students, she wasn't even graduated as a tutor. She had put a proposal together for the following year of a rainbow. And in this country, the rainbow was symbolic with thinking beyond the pandemic. And we said, well, let's choose that as our first class. And we put it together and it sold out in nanoseconds. And so we had to run it again. And I think even a third time, because we had people coming online, but not just from Britain. The exciting bit was that we had people from all over, from Europe, all the way across to America, and then eventually Australia and New Zealand. And so, you know, since then, we've really been operating not just on one time scale, but on three, so that we have things for the UK and Europe market, for the US and Canada market, and for Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, it's brought a whole new aspect to our work. And that's what's made it so exciting. And then in summer of 2021, I thought, well, you know, in 2020, we had been going to hold a second summer school in America. Well, of course, we couldn't hold that.
Right.
But we realized by then that people really wanted to do embroidery because it was a bit of peace and quiet. It was a bit of joy in the middle of all the trauma that there was through the pandemic. And it was really helpful to people, both those who were newly starting on it and those who knew how just when you focus on doing a piece of embroidery, you can really give your whole mind and body to it. And then it allows other parts of the mind and body to just calm and heal. And so for that reason, we did our first online international summer school in 2021. And it was a huge hit. And we did literally have people from all over. And as you can't see because it's a podcast, but behind me on my wall, I actually have a world map, and I can point and say, if I point with my right arm, that it goes all the way to the west coast of America and Canada. And if I point with my left arm, it goes to Australia and New Zealand. And we now have people regularly tuning in for our talks and coming on our classes from those places and almost everywhere in between. You know, it really is fantastic that we have become even more worldwide and international in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's just tremendous, because you're 150 years old, and you know, obviously you have reach, but your core has always been the UK, and yep. Yeah, there's some reach, but now you need a global map because everything you do, you have to think the entire world. Yeah,
we certainly do. And you're right, last year we were 150, and that was why, you know, not least in 2020, it's not going down on my watch when we're so close to being 150. And we all felt like that. It wasn't just me. And so we were, but it was quite challenging, because last year we had a wonderful exhibition at the Fashion and Textile Museum here, which was founded by Zandra Rhodes. And I was trying to curate that exhibition all through lockdown. And the scary bit was the Fashion and Textile Museum itself was closed down, and many of the places from which we wished to borrow pieces were closed down. Yeah. So I was desperately trying to pull all this together. But in the end, it came good. And we had a fantastic exhibition. And people will say, oh, no, I missed it. But no, if you go onto the RSN's website, which is royal-needlework.org.uk, you can even still go and see it as an online exhibition. You can see all the pieces that you missed. They're still there. So you don't need to feel that you missed it. And that took you through literally our 150 years, the kind of work that we've done, everything from royal work to the military, to the church, to luxury fashion. We did lingerie in the 20s and 30s, through to the work through our classes and our students. So, yes, you can still go online and see that.
And see, and there's another facet, is in our busy lives, if we can't be there at the moment, it's recorded, it's still available, we don't have to miss out.
And exactly, yeah, yes.
Yeah, classes, you know, everything. That's such a benefit. And we've learned more than ever. I think we obviously would have gotten there in 4 or 5 years. There's no question about that. But that pandemic just drove us And you know, I can imagine at the Royal School there, as you're working your way through this, at some point light bulbs start going on with people saying, hey, wait, we can do this, we can do this, mm-hmm. we can do this. You know, let's talk about how we might pull this off online and knowing full well the reach that you were going to have.
We certainly did. And we had our sort of advance guard, people who had to start teaching on the Future Tutor program or the degree. And then we used their knowledge and their skill, and we brought in the other tutors so that tutors were teaching tutors, this is how you can do it and how you can position your camera and how you can get, if you've got one camera on the work and then one camera on you so they can see you and they can see the work. So we went through all of that. So the tutors learned from each other and shared tips and tricks and things that they picked up so that they could really make the most of it.
Yeah. Now, you guys obviously have a long history and a reputation for teaching at a very high level and, mm-hmm. and a consistent level. Did you feel that there was any fall off in the educational aspect, or were you able to sustain that?
With effort, we were able to sustain okay. it, because that was really important to us. And it had been the reason why we always kind of demurred from going for the online approach. But we thought that it was always, what's the best way that we can show this, or how do we do this so that we maintain that standard? And that was really key to us. As I say, that learning that was done in the initial few months was really critical. And then we've built on that since. And we took our time. So the class that people have always, well, have come to us internationally for before was the certificate and diploma.
Right.
So we didn't rush that out. We actually did preparation. We did some tests. We piloted it with a few people who were already on certificate and diploma to see how they would get on. And then we actually launched, again, on three time zones, we launched it in January 2021. And it's been going strong ever since. In fact, we now run it three times a year online, again, on the three time zones. And this season, we had to have two classes for North America because there were so many people wanting to do it, which was terrific. So now we do a special introduction. So you don't start cold, as it were. I do an introduction with a little bit of RSN history, and I show you start with Jacobean crewel work. So I show you pieces from our collection, and then the tutor takes you through all of those basic things like framing up. You know, how does the RSN do it? Because it might be different to other people. And how do you choose your colours, and how do you plan your design, and so on. And we take you through step by step. So it's not scary, and people have really enjoyed it, and then stay on to do the other techniques as well. So that's been working really well.
And so then actual growth has come globally out of this.
It has indeed. It has indeed. So yes, we've got now we don't have to worry about running out of space at Hampton Court for just weekend classes, which was what was happening. Because we can offer short courses in more ways. They don't have to be at weekends. They don't have to be whole days. People are really enjoying having, say, 2.5 hours, 3 hours of an early evening. And that helps us to pick up both UK, European and American audiences as well on that. So all can be on the same time zone. If something's kind of like 6 o'clock in the evening here, it's still a reasonable hour in much of the US for people to be able to join in.
Right. Yeah, you really get to be an expert on time zones, don't you?
Oh, I do. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, doing this podcast with people all over the world. Yeah, I've become quite good at it, and I know that feeling. Yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, along with all of this, I'm sure I've never been, but I'm sure there's nothing like this experience of a class or a course at the palace there. That mm-hmm. still continues. That's still in place, and people who want to travel can certainly experience that.
Yes, and particularly coming up, we've got the International Summer School, when you not only get to come to Hampton Court Palace to stitch with like-minded people who might be from all over the world, but also this year we're going to be taking you to a special exhibition as part of that week that's got an RSN connection. And I can't go into more details because they haven't been publicly released yet. But that's a real special for this year.
Yeah, yeah. Now, have you also then, with this growth, found that you've needed more tutors? Have you brought some people out of the woodwork to help out?
I mean, a little bit of that, and we're growing them as fast as we can. Okay. But it is a 3-year training program, right. And that doesn't get any quicker, because we do want them to be, you know, fully trained. So we're continuing with that. And we are going to be looking at doing that in a slightly different way going forward. But the teaching of our tutors is absolutely critical, because, you know, people have lives, and sometimes they can't teach for us as much as they did, but then others will come back and teach. And you know, it's great, but we're engaging. We've got about between 30 and 40 tutors who are working with us now. And, you know, some are doing 1 day a week at Hampton Court. Others are doing several days a week online. And it just varies. Yeah. So we're able to kind of fit in with their lifestyles as well.
Right. Yeah, there's another chart on the wall. All the people that can help us out.
The availability chart, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it changes in so many little ways that all come together and make it happen. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, 150 years, you pulled it off, but it had to be really frustrating that you couldn't celebrate 150 years. I mean, that's huge, huge accomplishment. But celebrate that with live people in place and everything, pulled it off. But now you're continuing that celebration with the celebration theme this year and the Forward campaign, several things at play there too.
Absolutely. Well, I take the view that if Disney can get away with celebrating one anniversary over two entire seasons, two entire years, then so can we.
Darn right.
And,
yep.
And we're older than Disney. So, you know, fantastic that we started last year. But you see, technically, our birthday is the 5th of November. And so by the time we got to that, we're nearly into a new year. So we'll celebrate this year as well. So, yes, it has been fantastic to have. So we had many things going on last year, and the book, An Unbroken Thread, came out last year, which charts our 150-year history. But also this year, as I say, it will run into having our International Summer School again. And again, celebrating just so many people coming together and stitching, whether that's online or in person. And it's just so enjoyable to have that stitching in the summer, have people to come together and really enjoy what they're doing.
Now, I'm going to back you up there. You said there's a book that people love to buy books about needlework. What is the name of that book?
The book is An Unbroken Thread, and I wrote it. It's the story of the 150 years. So it's got examples of work that we've done across that time. It's got some of the backstory, the times that were quite difficult for us and how we overcame them, and the remarkable fact that we're still here today. Because clearly, as I researched it during lockdown, it was very clear that there could have been many times when we disappeared. But with a bit of help from our friends, we managed to keep going.
Yeah. All right. So The Unbroken Thread, we can get that at the Royal School shop there online.
You can get that at the Royal School Needlework shop. Yeah.
Because I have a couple of your books, the Royal School books, and they are top notch. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure this is too. So, that'd be one for the collection. All right.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure we get that clear so people can be aware and buy it. And yeah, I'll bet you that was an interesting research project, and as much history as passed in 150 years, I'm sure there were several times where things were hanging by a thread.
They certainly were. And
that was a bad pun. I shouldn't have
used
that.
No, that was an excellent pun. I thought that was really well done, Gary. reading it, and I actually had to bring some of the archive boxes home during lockdown, and I pored over them. And then I went on to onto the newspaper files, because certainly in the very earliest days, our own archives are somewhat limited. So I was actually getting quite a lot from us appearing in the newspaper, because we were a new thing and we were much copied. There were lots of other schools of art needlework that set themselves up, but we were the only one that was royal. Mm. And so there were lots of press cuttings. I think my favourite was reading about Queen Victoria making a visit. And she became our patron in 1875. And then in 1876, we sent out a whole pile of pieces of work to the Philadelphia Centennial Exhibition in 1876. And then when they came back, we held an exhibition. Basically, they hadn't sold in America because there was some huge tariff that had to be put on them. Oh. So they had, by the time you'd paid for shipping and you'd paid for this tariff, which was about 30% on top of the cost, you could understand why people weren't going to buy. So it all came back and we had an exhibition and we sold pieces there. And Queen Victoria came for a visit, and on this visit, she turned up unexpectedly. I mean, the thought of the Queen turning up unexpectedly today is just nonsense. But anyway, she turned up unexpectedly. And so, but when she came in, the exhibition was on a higher floor. So all the people who were working there were told to put all their things away, tidy up in very quick order. And of course, being Queen Victoria, she not only comes in and inspects and talks to the people working on things, she asks to look inside the cupboards.
Uh-oh.
And the fact that this was reported in one of the papers, I just thought was lovely.
That has to be a moment when royalty walks in like that, especially the Queen. And wait a minute. There's stuff everywhere. Clean up.
Yes.
Oh, my. That's and you guys still get royalty visits from time to time, but I'm sure they're highly planned these days. Yeah,
but there's a bit more planning to them these days. Yes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yep. Now this forward 150 forward campaign. There's one thing in here. You've got the Stitch Bank. We'll talk about that. The RSN collection. But there's one item, a third item here that I think is really important to focus on, and that is mental health and well-being and the role that needlework plays. We've done several shows where we've talked about that topic, and there's such an awareness these days of mental health in general. Time and time again, we see the importance of needlework and how it can help people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that we as the RSN have known since the First World War. We actually supplied designs for returning soldiers and sailors to work on, whether as occupational therapy or as mental health therapy, when they returned, to be able to overcome, either physical disabilities if they needed to bring more back dexterity back to a hand or something, but also just that it was calming. And it helped them to focus. And one of my predecessors, Lady Smith Dorian, in the Second World War, she actually sent a worldwide press release, well, to all the Allies anyway, saying, don't knit, stitch. Because she said, knitting, when you get good, you can knit on automatic pilot, as it were. And so you're not actually resting any part of you. You're just knitting, and you could still be standing there worrying. Whereas with stitch, you have to put all of your mind into what you're stitching, and that allows other parts of the mind and the body to calm and to heal. And so she really advocated this. And I have to say, it was taken up in several of the countries, so Australia, New Zealand, but mostly in Canada. Again, when I was doing my research, I tracked that it had been picked up by, well, tiny newspapers I'd never even heard of, in tiny towns I'd never heard of in Canada. But it was picked up all the way across to encourage them to stitch And also to for returning personnel to Stitch as well. So, yeah, I think we've taken it forward now into its 21st century version, which is to recognise that Stitch can be so beneficial. Just take a little bit of time out of your day, do some stitching, just be calm and be quiet. And we're finding it for all age groups. I mean, one of the really exciting projects that we've worked on is back in 2018, we introduced a project which was the schools, Stitch a Selfie, because we were very aware that kids at that time were just taking selfies of everything. And it was always fingers on their mobile phones. And so we kind of changed that with this idea of stitching a selfie. And we send out kits to schools. They can apply. Sorry, UK only schools, but they can apply. And in fact, a few weeks ago, just to show you how popular it is, one teacher had the kit and she was just extolling its virtues and saying how marvelous it was to a private group, web group of teachers of art, design and textiles. And over that weekend, we had 50 more applications for the kit. And one teacher wrote to us and said, "My colleagues are jealous. They know when I'm teaching Stitch because they go past the classroom and it's quiet." And it's this, you know, the kids get so involved in the stitching, they don't realise they're being quiet. You know, but it's fantastic to see it. So that's at school age. And last year we had younger school kids taking part in the Fashion Textile Museum. And we had family days. And that was fantastic because we'd get three generations. You know, there'd be mum, grandma and children. And we made no gender restrictions. It was open to everybody and all age groups to take part. And it was fantastic. Technically, we were meant to close for lunch, but people were always so engaged. We actually ended up all taking lunch in shifts so that people could keep going. It was so popular. And we'll be running that again in a number of places across the UK this year, because it really is popular. And we've had some wonderful sponsorship to be able to do that program again this year.
I'm so glad you brought young people up, because that is a concern that I have, and I'm sure others do too. Is if we don't start and work and focus on attracting young people to needlework, you know, we're literally going to die off. And so you found success basically
using
the phone as a launching point. You found success and brought young people in. That's great.
Yeah, and we've now extended that program so they can stitch a mantra, a sort of positive word for when they're having a bad day. They can just have that in their pocket and then they can feel better about whatever it is. But we've introduced it, and again, because they've not done it before, you know, they don't know that it used to be gendered, you know, so boys and girls will do it and enjoy it and have fun. And, you know, so then we're really engaged with that and encouraging them to carry on to do it at home, and then also can tell them about the classes that we run, the degree program, etc. So that's great in cultivating the next generation and bring it in as something new, and then they think it's exciting and different.
Yeah, it's much more than just women's work. It's
absolutely.
Yeah, it's art, and everyone can do it. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so important to have that. Yeah, that mental health thing there, you know, take that, knitters.
I'm not anti-knitter. I'm not anti-knitters. It's just, I think it is true. And certainly if you're a learning knitter, you'll say that you still have to concentrate.
Right.
But I think you always have to concentrate with Stitch. And it is just, it's so many people have reported back to us since lockdown that they took up again stitching during lockdown, and just how much it helps you breathe differently. It helps you, you know, you focus more, you know, it really can be therapeutic in a positive way, and help anybody. So this is one of the areas that we want to take forward and have the kind of therapeutic aspect of Stitch, the well-being aspect underpinning many of the things that we're going to be doing going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Concentrate while stitching. Last night, watching a movie, I kept stitching through an exciting part of the movie. And yeah, it had to come out. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I know better. I know better. Yeah. But no, no. But, out it came. Yeah. Redo it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice try. Yep. Oh, man. Now, one of the neatest things, and this is so powerful, that you guys are doing is this Stitch Bank. Not only for what it represents, but the presentation that you guys have put together is, my opinion, obviously, but is, I just think, absolutely outstanding, and what a tremendous resource. And we did a show here a couple of years ago when you were just getting it started, but it's really, really taken hold now and is really showing its true colors. You know, applause for that, because I think that you've really accomplished something.
Thank you. Yes, we're very proud of it. It now has 300 stitches. We've just got up to 300 stitches. And we launch another 25 every quarter. And you can go onto there. It's free to go onto it. It's just rsnstitchbank.org. And you go on and you can think, oh, you know, you can investigate some of the stitches. And they've all got a charming little icon. So just some of the pictures will make you think, oh, what's that stitch about? And then you can look it up. Or you can think, oh, I want to do a new piece of crewel work. What stitches could I use for that? So you can click on crewel work and it will tell you all the stitches that you can use for that. Or you can just think, gosh, I'm going to do a project and I want to put all of the stitches for the project in one place. And you can make your own little chart and put them into one place on the system so that you can just keep referring to them as you're doing the project. So it's just a fantastic resource. And ultimately, we want to add every stitch in the world. That's going to take us some time and some more resources, it has to be said. We had hoped to go to the UN because they have an arts fund, but unfortunately that's been closed since 2020. Yeah. We are hoping to find some other funding to enable us to work with different countries to bring their stitches onto the RSN Stitch Bank. And also what we might find is that the stitches are the same, but they operate them slightly differently, or they the work that they put them onto makes it look slightly different. And then we'll have examples, not just of work from the West, but from many different countries as well. So we're looking at being able to build that up. So, yes, we've got high hopes of really expanding on that. I mean, I have no answer to the question, how many stitches are there in the world?
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. Yeah. But we're still going.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. Just in preparing for this conversation, I thought, oh, I better, I hadn't looked in some time. I better go back and see where that thing's at. I'm in the middle of a very busy week with a paying job, and I had to stop myself. I mean, it just sucks you right in. I mean, it was like, okay, wait a minute. An hour had gone by and I didn't realize it. I just stopped.
Whoops. You know?
Yeah, but one of the things that came that I noted somewhere along the way is going back to the original stitches that had evolved, and going back and finding that original stitch and establishing that and keeping that alive. You know, that there's a real historic function there, but you know, a stitch that everybody knows. No, it long ago it used to be done this way and it looks different. Yeah.
Yes. And we're doing that. We've been working with somebody who's been researching medieval stitches. So those are going to be coming on soon. And so, yes, it's fascinating to see how a stitch evolves and equally how a stitch goes around the world. I mean, my favorite example is, of course, chain stitch, because you think of it as being something that can go round the world. And that literally came from China, you know, about 5,000 years ago. And has been used in every country since.
Yeah.
But then you can get variations on chain, you know, you can get detached chain and so on. So it's just fascinating to see the variety of the stitches and just the whole putting the thing together, the stitch bank. You just learn so much. As you say, you can easily lose an hour by dipping into it. And we've had lovely stories from groups that have used stitches out of stitch bank or sponsored a stitch and then used that for a project. And that's terrific.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing that people should note is it's very interactive. You alluded to it. You can you can set up your own set of stitches. You can collect your own set of stitches as a reference, so you're not going to the massive bank every time. You can set those aside and immediately go to those. So it becomes much more than just this vast resource. It's an interactive tool, as like you said, as you're working on projects. And, you know, that's a lot of power there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Certainly is, yeah.
And then as a former teacher, the other part, I just really want people to use this thing. The other part of it is if you've done any teaching, you know that people learn visually or by hearing or by reading, mm-hmm. kind of the three things. And you guys have as much as you can, offer those three forms of learning so that it makes it so much more accessible to people. And it's just really great because most people would put up, you know, here's a couple pictures or here's a diagram and move on. But you've gone that extra mile to make sure that no matter how you learn, you can pick up on these stitches.
That's right. You've got pictorial diagrams, you've got written instructions, and you've got a video. So you can choose which one of the three ways suits you to learn.
Yeah, it's just done so well. I'm not sucking up to you. I'm just telling you, it just is really done well, and it's such a powerful resource. And people need to basically wear it out as they're stitching. It's mm-hmm. yeah, there's just so much to it. Really, really good. Yeah.
Yes, we encourage all our tutors now to use it so that when they're creating their classes, they can point people to it. So that if you're between classes and you're doing some homework, you think, oh, I can't remember how to do that stitch, you know where to go to look it up, and that's terrific.
Yeah, it really is. Now, you mentioned sponsoring stitches. Tell mm-hmm. us how that. Tell us what is that mechanism, because. You know, local groups, chapters of organizations, local needlework stores, yep. Anyone can sponsor a stitch.
Absolutely. An individual or in memory of somebody. We've had quite a lot of that. Or groups, certainly, we've had from many different places. So you can go onto our website, even on the RSN Stitch Bank itself, it has a section called Sponsor a Stitch. And you can click on that and it will... give you the information about it. Now, because there are so many stitches and so many people, if you sponsor a stitch as an individual, we will allocate you a stitch. If you are a group, we can give you, as long as you're going to come back quite quickly, we can give you three options. And so you can go on, and the person that you need to contact in that case is a lady called Gillian Williams. And if you go onto the RSM website, it will show you how to send an email to one of us and the contact people. And we can then send you those three for a group to choose which one they would like. But as I say, for individuals, we allocate the stitch. And people have found some, you know, really quite curious and interesting stitches coming their way, which has been really fun. Because then they'll go and find it and find out how to do it when they see the stitch.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that there's some guidance given, because now at 300 stitches, I mean, how would you then select the stitch you want to sponsor? No,
exactly, because most of the obvious ones have already gone, right. So people wouldn't even know what stitches there are, yeah. And so that's why we do it.
That's excellent. And so then when I sponsor, then there's some money that changes hands, which then supports...
That's right, which keeps the stitch bank growing. Yes, that helps us to put new stitches on. So there are two amounts in pounds, 130 or two, I think it's 240. And you can look that up. And that then helps pay for the four people who work on it part time to do the next batch of stitches.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and people will – you know, whatever amount it is in whatever currency, if you look at the Stitch Bank, you will see immediately why funding is needed to keep it going at that level. Mm-hmm. There are people, time, photography, editing,
yes,
writing,
all of those,
all the things that go into something of this magnitude. And that costs money. So it's a way to help out and then to get some get your name involved in a tremendous resource. So, yeah, people need to take advantage. Yep. Yep. Now, let's get to specifics about what is coming up in the next year, the next 18 months, whatever. What are some of the things? You've got your summer school. What are some of the things that people can participate in globally?
Yes. So, our next biggie is the summer school, which will take place online in July of this year and at Hampton Court in August of this year. And we've got 14 online classes from beginner through to advanced. There really is something for everyone. And the online classes, many of them start at 2 p.m. UK time. So certainly East Coast, Canada, America, you know, that's a reasonable starting time in the morning for you. It might still be a little bit early for West Coast, but, you know, that means that we can pace things through. And there's such a variety. Mostly they are 2 and 3 day classes, a couple of 5 day classes, but just such a variety of different techniques. Again, you know, the advantage of the RSN is that, you know, that everyone is an RSN taught tutor, but they can come up with some really fantastically different ideas. Plus, for those who are going to be going on and want to develop their own ideas in Stitch, we've got there's an art class for one of them, which, again, when you can do it in your own home and only share it when you want to, that can be very encouraging for many people who would hate the thought of being in an open art class, something like a live art class. So that can be a good way of participating, to think about turning art into designs for embroidery is great fun. But we're also doing live classes at Hampton Court for 1 week in July in Glasgow, up in Scotland. And we've got 3 classes in Australia this year. They are online because we want to open it up to Australians, West and East and New Zealanders. But it's on Australian time because one of our tutors has gone home to Australia now. And so instead of our Australians having to stay up late into the evening, they're able to have it on a much more reasonable time zone now. So that will be a first for this year.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Matching up the Australian time with is a real challenge. So
it is.
Yeah, that's terrific. So here in the U.S. then, the way you've got that timed, I could just say to the boss, I'll be late for work for the next week.
Yeah.
I'm doing a course and
or 2 days or whatever. Yeah. And you could fit it in that way. Yes, we've tried to mix and match it a bit more, so you don't have to sign up for the 5 days, or you don't have to sign up for 5 days altogether. You can do a 2 and a 3 separately. So there's lots of permutations of the classes that you might want to take, and as I say, many different techniques being incorporated. So you can see them all on our website. So royal-needlework.org.uk, and go onto there. And it's got a whole thing saying International Summer School, and click on that. And that will take you through to look at the classes. And then you can have a little dream and drool. And, oh, that looks nice. Oh, no, that looks nice. And then you can make your decisions from there. We have got a special offer. And I do know that, Gary, your listeners will like a special offer. So that there's a special reduced price until running up to Easter weekend. So make your booking before the end of the Easter weekend, and you get a special discount. And if you book 2 classes, you'll get a further discount of £70. And if you book 3 classes, you'll get a further discount of £140. So definitely worth having a look now, not waiting until later and then thinking, oh, I missed it. So have a go now. And although I do have to say that some classes have already sold out. So sooner rather than later would be my advice.
Yeah, don't sit around talking about it. Get on it. Yes. Now, there was mention in my reading about offering a class in Japanese. Is multilingual class offering something coming?
Yes, it is. As I use my rudimentary Japanese. Yes, it is. We've already started this because we have two Japanese tutors, so who have been taught in this country and are still in the UK. And so they have been teaching. It's a lovely little sampler of Hampton Court, but they now teach it due to demand in both Japanese and in English, not in the same class. So you don't need to worry. It'll either be in Japanese or in English. And it does say on the top which one it is. But that's the next one is taking place live at Hampton Court for both of them. But they have been doing them online as well. So just look out for that if you're more interested in the online.
And I talked right over your Japanese. So practice that again.
I said, hi, so des. Yes, it is what it means.
Okay. All right. There. Now I'll listen to that 400 times and then I'll have some Japanese in my repertoire here. That'll be good.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Say that again.
Arigato gozaimasu, which is thank you.
Okay. All right. See, I'm learning already. Yeah. But no, that's terrific. So tutors, and then you're able to expand the languages, and that just opens more doors. Yeah.
It does indeed. Yes.
And then
yes, we already have a certificate and diploma tutor who's based in Japan, and she teaches in Japanese on Japanese time, and we've had some very lovely pieces from students there.
Well, that's great. Now, what physical, you obviously have the palace. What other physical locations do you have now around the world?
Okay, so we have in the UK, we also teach in Rugby, which is in central Britain, in Bristol in the west, Durham in the northeast, and in Glasgow, which is in Scotland. So in Japan, we teach in Tokyo and Osaka, and then we have gone back to teaching twice a year. Well, usually twice a year, not at this time this year. We're waiting until the autumn, where we teach near Williamsburg. And then since then we've moved it to Fredericksburg, which is a bit further north, not much nearer to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. So that it makes it a little bit easier to get there. But looking ahead, we are hoping that next year we will be able to come back to the US to do a second summer school in person in July 2024. And that will be back in Lexington, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Ooh, mm-hmm. I can drive there. All right.
Excellent. Excellent.
That's a victory right there. We'll take that. Yep. So, and then also talk about the archives, the Royal School Archives of the, I'm not coming.
Yes. Well, we have been raising funds for, it feels like the past decade, in order to be able to digitize our archive and our collection. And in fact, when Gary came on to me this afternoon, I'd just finished interviewing one of our candidates, because we're interviewing at the moment for the curator and the archivist to begin to start this work, which is incredibly exciting. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. And so the idea is that we'll have a curator and an archivist, and we will endeavour to put all the pieces of the textile collection online so that people will be able to have a look at them in more detail than at the moment. And then with some of our archives, it won't be all the archives because that would just be way too much and overall probably a bit too boring. But the question we get asked most is, did my mother, my grandmother, my maiden aunt work, study at the Royal School of Needlework? And we have a permutation on that question at least once a week and often several times a week. And we can't answer that because we have nobody with the spare time to sit there and go through all the registers to see if they can find the name. However, one of the things that we will begin with for the archive is going through all those registers, getting them digitized, looking for volunteers to help us to transcribe, because it's all in beautiful 19th century copperplate writing, yep. which computers cannot read. So we're going to need real humans to help us to transcribe what it says in the copper plate so that we can then type it out digitally, and so that then people will be able to search and they'll be able to find the answer to that question themselves, as to whether their relative ever actually studied or worked at the RSN. So that's really,
wow,
I know it's on the verge. The fact that we're actually interviewing this week for the curator and archivist is incredibly exciting. And it won't happen immediately because it might take some time before they can come in. And then they've got to work out the system that we're going to have, then the computer system that we need to have for all the records to go on. And then they need to work out what nomenclature we're going to use, because as many of you may know, the big systems perhaps put embroidery into two terms, if we're lucky, hand embroidery and machine embroidery. Yeah. And we need many more words to describe the embroidery. So we have to set up that, like our own little dictionary to start with. And only when they've done all of that can we start actually with the objects. But they've got a task which will be to select 100 objects from the pieces that will give a flavour of the whole of the collection, because it's such an eclectic collection. Everything we have has been given to us. You know, we hardly buy anything because we're a non-profit. We don't have the money to do that. So we're reliant on people giving to us. Yeah. And so it really is quite a mixed collection of many, many different things. And it'll be fantastic for people to be able to see more of it online.
So there's potential that when you get this all set up, I could put together a trip to the UK and volunteer a day to sit down and look at 100-year-old ledgers and transcribe them.
Yeah, well, see, Gary, you don't even have to come, because we'll able to send you digitized pages.
No, I gotta come,
and you can yes, you get that. But yes, no, you could come and give us a day in person. Absolutely.
Oh, that would be so much fun. So here's a copy of a page, so I can just do it from my home and transcribe. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, having that. Yeah. Did my mother? Did my grandmother take a class? What class did she take? Oh boy, what fun that would be. Yeah.
Mm.
That's great. Yep. All right. Now, before we run out of time, and this is asking a question to which I do not know the answer. History, you got a coronation coming up. Is there a role for the Royal School in that?
Well, I am only allowed to give you one sentence.
No.
I know. That one sentence is, can now confirm that we are indeed working on something for the coronation.
Okay.
Gary, if you'd asked me last week, I couldn't even tell you that much.
Okay, so be happy with what I get. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great, because and I asked that because you guys have been involved in one way or another in so many major events with the royalty that I figured there was at least some role for you. Yes.
Yep. Yes, you'll have to come back to me after May for that.
Okay. All right. Well, we may just do that just to learn. So, yeah. Well, this has been such a treat, as always, but it really just paints a tremendous picture of the Royal School. And of course, it's evolved, obviously, over 150 years, evolved in many, many ways, but really leading the charge to expand knowledge and exposure of needlework. And it's just tremendous that you guys have found so many ways to reach needleworkers all over the world and share your knowledge and skills. Really, really applaud that.
Thank you, Gary. Yes, we're never stuck for ideas. We're always trying to push things forward. And there's just one little thought I wanted to end with, which is that one of the things we'd like to do is to offer to museums and galleries in the States an exhibition entitled Treasures of the RSN, and this could be something between 50 and 100 pieces from our collection. If any of your listeners could suggest any museums and galleries that we that take embroidery exhibitions or might be interested, we'd be very happy to hear from them, and then we can follow that up. But that would be something that we'd be looking at for sort of 2024 onwards.
Oh, that would be excellent. Yes. All right. Well, this will help get that word out. So royal-needlework.org.uk is the website. Also an Instagram, a Facebook, and YouTube page. So you can experience all that wherever. But the Royal School website will take up an afternoon easy. easy. And then you move on to the Stitch Bank, and then your day is gone. So that's how that works. yep. All right, Susan, thanks so much again. I appreciate it, and congratulations on the so many things that the school has accomplished.
Thank you, Gary. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to everyone for listening.